Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, this is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking baseball this afternoon. My dad, when I was growing up, loved baseball. I can't say that I was an avid fan. As a girl, I just was something, the most vivid memories I have is sitting in the baseball stands in Dodger Stadium when I was a kid. And I can remember every time we went, I always got in front of somebody that was smoking a cigar. So that's my most vivid memory. I have a fabulous guest on this afternoon, Lee Loewenfisch. And he has written a book that for any of you that love baseball, for any of you that would be a fan of the sport, this is a must-read. And if you're looking for that special gift, for a person that has everything but is an avid fan, this is a must-get for that person, whoever they might be. The book is about Branch Rickey. That's exactly the title of the book, Branch Rickey, Baseball, Ferocious Gentleman. Lee, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for those nice words. And I guess in most parks now, Donna, you're not going to have to worry about the cigar. you can't smoke inside ballparks anymore.
Yahoo! That's really a good deal. I'll tell you, that is my most vivid memory. And I just can remember saying, goodness gracious, does it always have to stink so badly? That's a girl thing, you know. I've never been a fan of cigars anyway.
Well, you know, the cover, the wonderful photo that Nebraska Press, my publisher, put on the cover has Branch smoking a cigar at the age of 80. And at that time, throughout his life, he tried to stop. He stopped, he started. He even had bets with his kids that he could stop. And there were times he did. But, you know, this was an age, you know, that people smoked a lot in public, and he didn't drink, or he only drank mm-hmm. when he had to relax his very agitated nerves. But he understood human frailty, and he did his best in baseball terms to work through that.
Oh, yes, he did. But what I found so fascinating was how much research you did on this man. Now, Lee, I want people to know that you are a historian, obviously. And this material, it makes for wonderful reading. Not only have you related history, but you have written it in such a form that it's not dry, dull, boring, and you go, oh my God, I'm going to go through 25 pages of details that just absolutely don't mean squat. As a journalist, as a broadcaster, you have been involved with other items that you have done. You obviously have a love of baseball. Why focus on Branch Rickey? Now, he was born in 1981, and he died in 1965. I know why you wrote about him, but I want you to tell my audience why you wrote about this man.
Well, I again, thanks for your praise of my book. I grew up in New York City, and I was old enough, I was a teenager when the Dodgers left for your city.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you're celebrating a 50th anniversary next year, and you got Joe Torre, who grew up as a Giant fan in Brooklyn about my age. So the saga of baseball really is one of the great sagas of this country, and I love history, and baseball is really one of the few institutions in this country where history matters. I mean, one of the reasons I think why people are so agitated about the steroid use and the doctoring of records as a result is that we take this very seriously, and that the continuity, the game, with the 90 feet between bases goes back to the 1840s, and so many things have changed in this country since then, probably everything, but still, that is the essence of the game. You're running around the bases and scoring runs and preventing runs, and nobody in my opinion, had an understanding of this and worked to create teams that had an understanding of baseball better than Branch Rickey. And he had been written about in passing, and there had been biographies a few decades ago, but nobody, I think, has put as much into it as I have these last 10 years, and it's been very gratifying to get the response that I've been getting.
Well, I think it's fabulous because he was involved for, well, it's such a significant portion of baseball. And baseball, if I remember my history correctly, is one of the original sports designed by Americans. Am I correct?
That's
correct.
That's correct. And it's no accident that baseball becomes the real national pastime at the turn of the 20th century, when we fought the Spanish-American War in Cuba and in the Philippines, and nationalism and American pride are booming. And again, it's no accident that the American League is created in 1903 to be an equal with the National League from 1876. So the growth of baseball as the national pastime dates very much to the emergence of the United States as a world power on the scene in international politics. And Branch Rickey was a witness to all of it. I mean, he was born in 1881 and grew up on a farm without much money, but great pride in the country and in religion. He was a Protestant. His full name was Wesley Branch Rickey. And he could have been a preacher if he had gone that direction, and he became a great lay preacher, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a lawyer. The people who saw his intellect at work felt that he had Supreme Court ability if he had chose that direction. But baseball was something he had played, not particularly well as a catcher on the major league level, but he understood the game. He coached college, and when he came to St. Louis in 1913 as the head of the St. Louis Browns, that started a 30-year love of that city that wound up with his running the Cardinals after World War One, and the Cardinals became the first team to beat the New York Yankees, who became a dynasty in the 20s with Babe Ruth and Garrick. But the Cardinals were the first team to beat the Yankees in the World Series in 26, and then they beat them again in 42. The only team in that whole period in the so-called golden age of sports that beat the Yankees. So when he came to Brooklyn, he set his mind toward beating the Yankees again, and while he didn't quite pull it off in the 1940s, he brought the Brooklyn Dodgers to become really America's team, you know, long before the Dallas Cowboys. So that's a big chunk of his life. But I wrote this long book because he never stopped working or loving baseball or seeing it as the best part of America. So before he passed away in 1965, he ran the Pirates and built a team that he wasn't around to enjoy, but they won the World Series in 1960. And then he tried for a Continental League as a third league when baseball was slumping at the gate. And while that didn't happen, it did result in expansion of baseball to areas that really needed it. So that's quite a life. In fact, it's at least maybe three or four lifetimes in one.
Well, he's an awesome man. I want to go back. I want to go back to when he was growing up, because when we look at a person who has accomplished what he's accomplished, it builds on so many various factors. And I was surprised when, first of all, I learned the influence that this man had had in the industry of baseball. But more than that, being in the time frame he was in, education, as you stated very succinctly in your book, book learning and formal education were not especially valued in the area that he grew up in. And it really wasn't valued because most of the people had to be out working on the farms. You know, there was so much physical labor that was needed. We didn't have the conveniences back then that we have today. So young people were put out to work because that's what the families needed. But I was amazed to find out that he had gotten his teaching certificate without even getting a high school diploma. But he was determined to do something with himself. He got $35 a month teaching in Turkey Creek. He was licensed, which just blew me away, to teach orthography, reading, writing, arithmetic, geography, English grammar, U.S. history, physiology, and hygiene. I mean, this is something when we hear this today, we go, oh, that wouldn't be possible. It was then. We're talking about the 1800s.
Yes. Well, you know, I like to be a generalist, I mean, because I've written on jazz and, you know, I've taught all kinds of American history, some European history, and Branch Rickey, I think, was attractive to me because he was the generalist writ large. I mean, he wound up becoming very adept in Latin, and first he was very bad at it, but he studied, and we wound up, his mentor wound up telling him he could teach his class when he was ill at Ohio Wesleyan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quite a saga of what you can do if you have a desire to succeed and you have this natural ability, work ethic. But with him and in meeting his family, there were three trinities in his life, or I should say there was a trinity in his life. There was God, you know, from his Wesleyan religion, and family. He had two brothers, and he wound up having five daughters and one son, and they have a lot of, they had a lot of kids and grandkids. I got to meet a good many of them, and they're all different personalities, but they all understand family. And the third thing in his life with God and family was baseball. I don't think anyone in baseball ever had an understanding of what kind of cost it was to play baseball professionally. I mean, and he was very adept at, when he had a player he signed, who was homesick, he understood that feeling because mm-hmm. home was very important to him. He was always going back to Ohio to visit his parents while they lived in near Portsmouth in the south central part of the state, and he was always alert to what his farmhands were feeling like in baseball because it's such a tough sport and it's such a long sport. I mean, it goes on, you know, from spring training in February, if you're lucky, till October or November, and really a baseball team spends more time together than a family spends.
Yes, they do.
And so he was very keen to that, and that's one of the things I wanted to bring out in my book.
Right at the first part of the book, you talk about a player called Charles Tommy Thomas from Zanesville, Ohio. And at the time, it was Ricky's first college coaching experience. This gentleman, Charles Tommy Thomas, was the only black player on the team and one of the few black students that had been admitted into this college. And it was what he went through then, at that time frame, that was in 1904.
Right.
He said to himself, I am going to somehow make a change in the thinking. And this was something that was very important because it was, and you'll need to give me the exact year because I don't have my notes in front of me, but it was the basis for him determining that he was going to have the black players included in the baseball teams. There was such a prejudice at the time. Now, there was a Negro League, and that's what it was called at that time. And so you have this incident in 1904. It was over, 40 years before he was able to do something about that?
Yes, absolutely. And I was glad to dig deep into that story because Charlie Thomas was a very good athlete. And in fact, Ricky felt a special connection to him because when Ricky lost his eligibility because he got money to play in the summer, which was not allowed back then, he turned Thomas into a catcher, which was Ricky's position. And he was a very good catcher, a good hitter. But when they went on the road to West Virginia and Kentucky to play games, he was shouted, epithets were shouted at him, and those games were played, but He could see how it was an obvious strain on his catcher Thomas. Then when they're going to play in South Bend at Notre Dame, they won't even let Thomas stay with the rest of the team. And Ricky is only 22 years old at the time. He's still a student, but he is the coach. And he talks the owner of the hotel into putting a cot in the room so Thomas can stay with him. And he was sensitive enough at that early age, Ricky, to know that there were butlers who were black and they could stay with their bosses. But this was a member of the team, an equal member of the team. Mm-hmm. And Thomas comes in, stretches out on the cot, and before Ricky can really pep him up and cheer him up, Thomas breaks down, this husky athlete, and he starts pawing at his skin as if to wipe off the color. If only I were white. And Ricky said he never felt as helpless as he did at that moment, because here was a society that was democratic in principle, and the prejudice against a black person was just seen so directly. Now, Thomas and Ricky remained friends, and when Ricky went to fame in St. Louis building the Cardinals, there was nothing he could do to bring up black players in St. Louis. I mean, the city was close to segregated, and the ballpark was segregated. Blacks had to be sit in the bleachers in a special section, you know, so they wouldn't mix with whites. And Thomas visits Ricky in the 1930s, and it's time for the game. And instead of telling his friend to go out and sit in a segregated section, he doesn't watch the game himself. He just talks to him and says one day it will change. And after World War II, which was a war that people should remember was fought against the race theories of Adolf Hitler.
Right.
The time was ripe to bring blacks into baseball. And Ricky was the one owner who now in Brooklyn worked secretly to find the best black players. And he was probably always looking for just the first pioneer, and that turned out to be Jackie Robinson. And, you know, I painstakingly tell that story about how he found Robinson and how Robinson, because he had played in college, like Charlie Thomas, by the way, against white players at UCLA. I mean, he was a tremendous athlete, Jackie Robinson.
Yes,
in fact, baseball was his worst sport, really. And so Ricky saw that Robinson would have the ability to play as an equal with whites, and he was able to sell Robinson on the idea that he could not fight back against the abuse that Ricky, as an experienced man, knew was going to happen.
Well, I think, again, you've given so many points of information. I was astonished to find out that Branch Rickey was the man that set up the training camp. He had this ability of being able to deal with what he called quirky personalities. He had the ability to recognize talent, and then he also said, they're going to have to be in training. We just can't wing this here. We have to put them into training. And he would watch, and he'd observe, and he got his scouts. He had people around him that he really respected and trusted. And my goodness, the loyalty that this man engendered. And yet his career, here he was 30 years with the Cardinals, and then he goes to New York and is working with the Dodgers, and the stuff that goes on with the Dodgers, it's phenomenal. This is a man that I don't know that I've never heard his name mentioned among any person that's been a baseball fan ever.
Well, I'm glad that you've taken to his story, because it is really a remarkable story. And as a New York fan, I'm sorry that he didn't stay in Brooklyn longer. I mean, he only was in Brooklyn for 8 years, and then his partner, Walter O'Malley, was able to buy him out when the third partner died, who was a Ricky man, John L. Smith, who's the story I tell in the book. I mean, the sagas in baseball, both off the field and on the field, are endlessly fascinating. And it's almost especially nice to talk about them now with you, Donna, you know, on the edge of winter, you know, because there'll be new sagas starting in February, March, and April. And so we can gestate on them now. And Ricky the last years of his life were not that successful after Brooklyn, and I think that's one of the reasons he's fallen out of favor, and that's one of the reasons I did the book. Because, you know, he was a tough man to negotiate salary with, and he believed in the old system, which has been smashed in the last 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he, as a personality and as a father and a grandfather, I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to bring out in the book, and I'm gratified that you've come to fall under his orbit as well.
Well, I really respect this man walking the talk, and walking the walk with the talk. This was someone that he had, you know, characters like Leo DeRocher, he had Dizzy Dean. I mean, he had so many different people that those that are really buffed with baseball will go, oh, yeah, man, I've got the cards, I got the books. They love these stories. But he was a man that set so many precedents that the baseball environment of today stands upon. And some may say we've gone forward, and I would say we have in certain ways, but demanding the quality of the players, demanding integrity from them. There wasn't the problem with steroids and drug usage. There was an expectation of standard. And do you think that baseball today will be able to pick up on that at some point?
I think the great thing about baseball, Donna, is that it survived a lot of bad ownership over the years. It survived scandals, you know, going back to the fixing of the World Series in 1919.
Oh, yes, the Black Sox and all that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, it has an amazingly self-corrective quality, because there is you can't fake it in baseball. And this is why, you know, the steroid thing, it's clear that while some people will argue that the steroid can't help you hit a ball any better than you could have, I mean, I think I would reply that you can certainly hit it a lot farther, and it is these drugs are illegal, and ball players shouldn't think they're outside the law. So, but we're seeing it corrective. I mean, I think the Mitchell report's going to be a step in the right direction, and we're finding out too that pitchers were cheating too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, the nature of the game is remains so beautiful that I don't think it ever can be killed. And the thing about Ricky that he was so good at is that if you could run and you could throw and you had some ability with the bat, He and you cared. You were an athlete, and you cared. I mean, he could make something out of you. And you know, a lot of teams are following in his footsteps. In fact, that was one of the reasons he wasn't that successful immediately in Pittsburgh when he went there in the 1950s, because the other teams had developed the farm system, and of course, the team he built in Brooklyn used to pound on the Pirates time and time again in that period of the 1950s. So, you know, the other thing that I think if he were alive today that he would love to see is how international the game has become.
Oh, yes, the Japanese. My word.
And the Venezuelans and the Dominicans.
Ooh. In fact, I was surprised to read about Jackie Robinson, how before he was signed on by Branch Rickey, that he was going for training in Venezuela so many years back. I went, wait a minute, they were going for training in Venezuela back in the 40s and the 50s?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it goes back earlier.
That's amazing to me. I thought everything, you know, training, if you were an American ball player, you trained here in the U.S. But that wasn't the case, was it?
No, and in fact, you know, I long for a day when there are normal relations between Cuba and the United States, because Cuba was a great hotbed of baseball. In fact, as Cuba began to be independent from Spain in the late 19th century, they took on baseball as a sport instead of soccer and other European sports as a way to show we're part of the American continent, and we like what our big brother is doing in the north. So the roots of baseball are very good in Cuba as well. So it is such a And it is an American sport. It has English roots, of course, but and Brad Tricky came of age at a time when it was the sport. I mean, football and basketball were nice things to do when we couldn't play baseball, but they were just something, you know, until the real season began. So I think that we're always going to have a good form of baseball in this country, and I just want it to be better myself.
Well, I think it's so fascinating to read about this man and to see the effect that he had on so many people, how he was the one that broke the color barrier, and he had been working towards doing this for a lot of years, but he had to wait until all the political situations were just so, and there was a law. Ives, what's the rest of the name of the law in New York that was passed?
Oh, the Ives-Quinn law.
The Ives-Quinn law.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story in the book that Ricky's eldest daughter told me about. He read the paper when they were training in Bear Mountain during World War II, because during World War II there was no spring training in the South because we were all together in this war. I mean, unlike today. I mean, people forget the sacrifice that people went through, you know, with carpooling and Victory Gardens, and there was going to be no spring training in Florida. So the Dodgers were up in Bear Mountain near West Point. In fact, Ricky, who was such a patriot, had them training at West Point at times. And he picks up the paper and he sees that the Ives-Quinn law is passed in New York State Legislature, which is a Fair Employment Practices Commission type law, which was already put in by Franklin Roosevelt before World War II. And Ricky sees the headline and he puts his coffee down and says with his mother, with his wife, who he called mother, and his daughter there, "They can't stop me now." And he goes and accelerates his scouting of black players. And with the Robinson signing, which occurred right after the end of World War II, I mean, really 2 weeks after the dropping of the atom bombs in Japan, it was so connected, and that's one of the things I've tried to bring out in my book, how much that Robinson breakthrough was connected to really the start of the civil rights movement after World War II. The line is direct. Harry Truman desegregated the military the very next year after Robinson was Rookie of the Year, and all the legal cases for Brown versus Board of Education started in 1951. And other teams were beginning, you know, to sign black players too, like the New York Giants, and one of the big rival of the Dodgers. And one of the sadnesses of that period is that Ricky wasn't around to see the fruits of all that good work that he put in. And in fact, both the Dodgers and the Giants, two of the teams that have the most black players in the National League, were gone to the West Coast by 1958.
Fascinating history. Branch Ricky, R-I-C-K-E-Y, is the title of this book, Baseball's Ferocious Gentleman. Again, if you're a lover of history of the game, it is an American original, and if you know of anybody that has a passion for the game, young, middle-aged, old, I don't care, this is a must-read. And there's so much that is portrayed regarding the era between the 1800s and 1965. It is absolutely amazing, and the influence of one man that rippled, and it went throughout the world, and it is still rippling. Do you have a website, Lee, that people can go to if they want more information?
Well, they can go to the NebraskaPress.typepad, TYPEPAD.com, and there is a web page for my book at the University of Nebraska Press. There's also the 800 number there, which is 800-755-1105. And it's available on all the internet outlets as well.
All right, give me your website one more time.
It's NebraskaPress.typepad, TYPEPAD.com. And check on Branch Rickey, Baseball's Ferocious Gentleman.
Wonderful. Lee, it's been great having you as a guest. Thank you so much, and I wish you the best of success with this book.
Well, thanks so much. It was a delight to talk to you, Donna, and a happy holiday season to you.
Thank you so much, sir. Same to you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back just a moment. Don't go away.
Very nice being with you, Donna.
Thank you.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I know we've got a caller on the line waiting. Before I go to that caller, I want to give out my toll-free numbers here, where if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, call 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians can call in on 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We have another line as well, 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Let's go to our first caller of the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Marcia calling from Riverside, California.
Hi, Marcia. Bright and sunny back down in Riverside, I bet.
It's very mild weather.
Oh, I know. I was born and raised in California, and this is the time of year where everybody wants to fly in there and get away from the cooling temperatures everywhere else. Okay, Marcia, let's get down to business with you. First thing that I'm looking at is there are so many loose ends in your environment, you're going to need to pull in and start tying them down. And tying them down so that you don't have them flapping around and causing interference. And it's a lot of little tiny petty stuff. And I want to say, segment your hours if you can, and go, I'll take 2 hours, and this is what I'm going to do. And don't let anything interrupt. And just go and do what you have to do. You have got to get all these loose ends tied up, I'd say, within at least the next 2 to 3 weeks. Because you have got so much that you're really wanting to move forward with, that if you don't do that, you're going to have some pretty big regrets. There is a lot going on with you, and there's a sense of frustration as if no matter how hard I work, it just seems like I'm not getting ahead. You really are, but it is, I don't know how to describe this. It's as if you've got to be aware that you must go through the feeling of limbo periodically so that you know you've got to anchor yourself down. It's a very odd thing for me to say, I know, but there is this almost like a disconnect that I see you experiencing, and I don't want you to have to go through that. So it's very, very important that you pay attention to the moment that you're in. And if you try to give yourself a little bit more organization with how you deal with things, it's going to work out better for you. So keeping an awareness of not overloading your platter of life will be good. And I think you're pretty astute with that. If you know that you've taken on too much, you know when to back up. and to say, thanks, but no thanks. I can't take on anymore. You're very disciplined about that. And this is very good. So just be patient with yourself. You've got a wonderful holiday season ahead of you. I wish I could tell you you're going to win a $10 million lottery ticket. You're not. But you're going to have so many other things to be so grateful for. And take the time to spend with your friends and those that are closest to you, because it is really going to give you some wonderful, wonderful memories if you do. What questions would you like to ask me? Or question, excuse me.
I hired somebody to do some work for me, and now there's a discrepancy on the bill. They're saying that I owe so much more to them than what I believe I owe, and they're going to get back to me within the next couple of days. Do you see that settling into an agreeable arrangement between the both of us?
I think what you need to do is sit down and write out exactly what your expectations were and what you requested. You need to also have an accountability of the hours. And I believe what happened here is that there were assumptions on both sides. I believe there can be an equitable agreement, but this is a lesson to you to get something in writing. And you need to be able to put it up front. You need to have the clarity. You're not going to get things for free. It's just not going to happen that way. So you need to really have a clarity when you're dealing with someone, and this is just a lesson to be learned. If you are hiring someone as an independent contractor, you need to have them specifically state what their hours are and that they have to keep a record on their hours. And if it's on site, fine. If they did something off site, maybe you don't pay them for the money, you know, the time that they put off site. It's up to you. I think neither one of you were clear. You might have assumed that you were, but I don't think you were.
Yeah. We've had a 20-year relationship, working friendship relationship, and I'm just hoping that it continues.
Well, I think, Derek, what you have to do is just be practical. Don't play games here. What we're dealing with is facts. You've known this person for 20 years. And what you have to just say is, okay, this is business, and this is what we need to have clarity on. Your friendship means a lot to me. It means more to me than anything else. So what we need to do is have clarity with this, and because I value your friendship so much, if this is uncomfortable for both of us, I think our friendship is worth more, and I'll find someone else to do the work.
Yeah. Well, I threw all records away because I trusted that
that was a mistake.
That's part of the assumption, and I'm just
right.
If there's still an ongoing working relationship, and I'm just hoping that...
All right, there's no hoping here. You have to deal with the facts. If the two of you are going to be working together, then there has to be clarity, and you should learn a lesson right there, and it's a big one. And you may have to pay a price for this. By paying extra money because you don't have any records to work from.
I know.
So this is a hard lesson for you to learn, and none of us like learning lessons like this. But it is business. It has nothing to do with the friendship. So don't muck up with the emotional side here. You're dealing with the practical side, and you have to be specific with it. And I think you can come to a compromise. But I also think you need to understand something, and that is if this friendship means a great deal to you, then you have to look at who else you're going to bring in to do work so that you can have this clarity and not this emotional confusion.
Yeah, so you do see a compromise, though.
Oh, absolutely. I think it can be done. But
okay.
You have to not be waffling willy here. You have to really be clear. You have to be clear, and she needs to be clear.
Yeah.
And both of you made assumptions. You're both guilty.
Yeah.
If you're going to use the word guilt.
Do you see what happened to the money that I sent? Because it's being said to me that they didn't receive the money.
All you have to do, if you sent the money, do you have a check?
Oh, see that.
Do you have a record of the check?
That's the problem. I sent it by money order, and I threw... When I was cleaning stuff up, I just threw it away. I thought I would, you know, it's been over several months.
That's not it, hon. Look, If you have money order, if you got a money order, you might be able in some way, maybe through the bank, I don't know, depending on where you got your money order from, you might be able to get a copy somewhere. I don't know, but I'd check to see what your resources are. That may or may not be a possibility. But usually if you have, let's say if you got something from Western Union, they'll have a record of it for the amount, et cetera. If you got it from a bank, ask if you can check on that, if you have the exact date. But if they said they didn't get it, then you're up the creek without a paddle if you don't have proof.
I know. And we've just had this 20-year, and it wasn't
right, you're going back over stuff we've just discussed. Now, I'm saying this to you because I want you to have some clarity here. And I know I'm repeating myself. Get the emotions out of this. You have not handled the business appropriately. One, because you threw away receipts. And when you're in business, especially when you have financial transactions, you should, depending on what your business is, you should keep them, period. You never lose the trail of where the money has gone. So you want to know exactly what you did and where you sent it. And in future, if you're going to be sending somebody money, send it by certified mail so that you have a copy of it. If you're going to use money orders, you make a copy and you keep your receipt.
Yeah, I know. It's a lesson learned. I just don't want to lose this relationship.
All right, you're going over the old stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? Come back. You're dealing with business.
Yeah.
This is business.
Yeah.
So if someone is saying, we didn't get the money and you didn't write a business check, instead of the money order, you should have a business account where you could get a copy of what you had sent, and then that would go through your account so that you would know that that money had been collected.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Okay. All right, and it's a tough way to go. But we all have lessons to learn, and if this is what you want to do, that's what you have to pay attention to.
Okie doke.
All right, you take care, and you have a wonderful holiday season.
You too.
Bye-bye. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, by the way, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about whatever you desire. For those of you in the state of Washington, I'm going to be doing a special appearance on December the 8th at the Dickens Festival in the Stadium High area in downtown Tacoma. This is a wonderful, wonderful event. There's going to be carriage rides. There's all kinds of entertainment. There are stages. I've been invited to do many consultations at the Tacoma Little Theater, and I'll be there from 12 noon until 5 in the afternoon. So it is a wonderful, wonderful event. I'm going to have more information in my newsletter. Just know that you can be in touch with me if you want more information. My number here at my office is 800-872-8852. You can go to their website, which is dickensfestival.net. Dickensfestival.net. It's a wonderful, wonderful holiday festivity for the family. It's just absolutely great. So I've been very pleased that I've been invited to participate in that. Also, I want to, again, remind you the email newsletter will be coming out. And then I'm going to be listing some appearances also for the month of February, things that are going to be coming up. So if you'd like to subscribe to my newsletter, then just send me an email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Also, for those of you that have children, if you would like for me to autograph and personalize my award-winning children's book for you, then just, you know, give me a call at my office. That's a lot quicker than doing an email. Give me a call at 800-872-8852, and we can get that book off to that special child that means so much to you. It's just wonderful, and the families, they use it as part of their celebration every year. So for the holiday season, and that's my wonderful book, God's Kiss. So give me a call at 800-872-8852, and we can get that off in the mail to you in plenty of time for Christmas. Well, I promised you that I would be giving you the winter horoscope for a few more signs here. Let's start off with the sign Libra. Hey, the next 3 months, let's see what we've got for you. Well, it looks like if you're under the sign of Libra, your love life is going to be good. Also, you've got a good month of December. There's a lot of things going on, positive interaction, and actually, if you're in business, it looks like you're going to be making a pretty good profit. Now, when we pop over to the month of January, take some time for rest and relaxation. Yes, R&R is really going to be very meaningful for you because you're not going to have a quiet schedule. Mm-mm. You're going to be one busy person, and you're going to find that your career is going to take a lot of your time. Make sure you make time for friends, not just for yourself, but have, again, some R&R. We have fun and laughter. And then February, wow, you're really going to be doing some introspection in February because you want to make sure that you keep a good balance in your life, so you're going to be doing a lot of evaluations. So that's for the sign of Libra. For those of you under the sign of Scorpio, well, you're going to be during the month of December. Family and friends are going to be your focus. You are really going to want to make sure that you have those that you love the most around you and are interacting with them to the greatest of your capacity. You might also be thinking about what you might want to do in 2008 for business. And it's a good time to work through your plans, your agendas for 2008. In January, for those of you under the sign of Scorpio, trust your instincts. Money's going to be very important to you. You may decide you want to get into real estate or some other type of investment. And by golly, if you learn to listen to what you feel right about, trust those instincts, you are going to really be able to move on them. And you're going to find that January is a great time to start your new projects as well. February, for those under the sign of Scorpio, you are going to be looking at how your life is really going to be moving forward in the direction that you want. You're going to sort of make an evaluation about those associations you have, personal, professional, that maybe you want to start moving away from because you're going into a new direction. Whatever you do, just remember, you're going to be doing a lot of thinking before you do the doing. Sagittarians, well, the month of December, boy, you're going to have a fabulous holiday season. It looks like money seems to be coming your way in some of the most unexpected opportunities. There's just a lot of good things going on for you. It's like you're getting the recognition that you have yearned for. January, you're going to find yourself, those of you under the sign of Sagittarius, that you're going to have a partner that's going to come in and enable you to do your work more effectively, and you may even have a special love connection that will evolve in February. Pay attention to what you're doing. You're going to find if you give your best in your working environment, you are going to be noticed by someone, and they're going to say, let's help you move forward. I want to see you successful. You may get a promotion or may find that venue that's going to enable you in the business world to step forward in the way that you desire. So that's the next three signs, and we'll have a few more. We've got six more to go, and I will be sharing those with you over the next few shows. Meanwhile, we've got a caller on the line waiting. This is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Good evening, Donna. This is Lyle, and I'm from Indianapolis.
Hi, Lyle. Lyle, I need to go on a break, and will you stay with me? We're going to put you on hold, and I'll be right with you.
Yes.
All right. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment, and we'll be back. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497.
If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be going directly to Lyle. Lyle, thank you for waiting. He's calling in from Indianapolis, Indiana. Lyle, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Okay, the first thing I'm looking at, Lyle, is I'm seeing you being interviewed by someone. Now, this is an interesting opportunity for you because you're not in somebody's office. You seem to be in a somewhat social situation. And this is an individual that you're having conversation with, and I want to just make you aware that how you're presenting yourself is going to make a difference to this individual. And they may make a statement about they're looking for a particular type of person to assist them, and you're saying, well, this is my background, this is my expertise, and you're chatting. Remember, when you're in these social gatherings, whether they're in a seminar situation or not, people may be looking for someone with your background, with your desire for achievement, and with what you have a passion for. They may want you to become a part of this team. So you need to be cognizant socially that you are going to present yourself with that image that is going to speak volumes about who you are as an individual. I am looking at this person, for all intents and purposes, doing what I describe as a mini interview, and then I want you to be sure you have a business card or something you can give him to so he can contact you and get one of his, if that's possible. And this is going to be very important because it looks like from this interaction, there's some kind of a follow-up. And I think you are going to be taking off in a new direction for career and opportunity, especially starting after the 10th of January. So I really like what I see here. I'm enjoying what I'm perceiving. And I just want you to know that your hard work one is paying off, but you haven't seen, as the old saying goes, you ain't seen nothing yet, because you still have a lot of sweat equity to put in to get that refinement and polish of professional edge that you really want to have. But that's okay. Just be sure you have those people around you who are mentors and supporters that will enable you to have that communication of support that you want so badly for that personal accomplishment. You're going to make it. You're going to do well. But it is incrementally. And it seems like when you move forward, it's like a gigantic step forward. And then bingo, there you are. And then there's another period of time where nothing seems to go on, and then all of a sudden there's a gigantic step forward, and there you are. So be good to yourself, be patient, and just know that you're on the right track. Do you have a question for me?
Yeah, well that was interesting. I can't wait for it to happen. But I had a question. I am about to file some court papers. I've got a court proceeding coming up, and I wanted to know how it will go, or if you had any feelings on it.
All right. First, the first thing that popped into my mind, whatever you do, do not misplace copies of your records and data that you're processing. You've got some complications here, and should you have an attorney, make sure the attorney has copies of everything that you put out, but do not give him the originals. You make sure that you have your own copies, because I'm seeing some papers misplaced. So if you need to make duplications, they'll be available. And don't assume that if it goes into an attorney's office that it will not get lost. Don't do that. Just use good sense here. I'm seeing some problems with this. May I ask what's... Oh, dear. Lyle, we're out of time.
Okay.
My goodness. But there are some challenges with this case.
Okay.
And you need to know that. So don't go in this blind.
All right.
Okay?
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir. I'm sorry we're out of time. You have a wonderful holiday season. This is Donna Siebel. I'm sorry we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is good. Expect the best. It'll happen. Believe me. If you expect the worst, that'll happen too. Talk with you tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Swahili Sheikh. Yes, the Feng Shui of Africa. Donna Siebel will talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.